Yankees Files Podcast. We are back. I'm Will Harris, you're Alec Whipple, and the rest of you are fans of the team that is projected to lead Major League Baseball in Fangraphs war. And as far as I'm concerned, that means win the World Series. So that would be the New York Yankees. Whipple, it's almost Christmas. We got Aaron Judge's press conference yesterday in which it was announced that he'll be the captain of the New York Yankees. We got Carlos Rodon's today in which Brian Cashman noted that Matt Blake made his return conditional on the Yankees upgrading the pitching staff, which was already very good, and then they did it, so that's cool. The Yankees also are bringing back Matt Blake. This team is so good, and I'm very happy to be a fan of them. How are you?
I'm doing well. I am not taking finals, and the Yankees still signing good players. Like, both very positive things, because, you know, I would have gone and retaken some finals if I had realized the only way for the Yankees to sign good players was contingent upon me doing that. But thankfully, I am here. I'm not doing that. The Yankees are doing what they need to do. And, you know, this kind of leads into the thing I feel like we need to talk right up the top, because I'm seeing, and I know you're seeing, a lot of takes that are saying the Yankees offense related to the offseason, which is what I meant to say. The Yankees offseason is not a success so far, and people are disappointed with it. People are saying, well, why didn't they just address the offense right at the top? Why do we even need Rodon? And I'm here to say that is absolutely insane for two reasons. One, you have signed the best hitter on the planet, and I know he was on the team last year, but there was no guarantee he was going to be on the team this year. You can't act like Aaron Judge is just, you know, this is how it was last year, and it's just getting them back to that level. Well, that is true. There is a lot of, you know, a lot of possibilities where Aaron Judge was not on this team in 2023. Probably not realistic given what we know now, but it certainly is not a lock that teams will re-sign their own free agents. In fact, I think the majority of players signing contracts as large as Aaron Judge's switch teams. So this is actually a rarity in terms of massive mega free agent signings. The other thing is, when you sign a player who's good, like, I don't care if you already are a strength of that position, because we know in baseball, strengths and weaknesses, you know, it's just hard to predict. Like, your strength could turn into your weakness and vice versa. Depth can erode with injury, underperformance. I'm always going to take the good player at the position that already has depth versus, you know, an okay player where there might not be more of a need. And, like, damn, Carlos Rodon is exactly what the Yankees need, even though they didn't need pitching, if that makes sense. And I'm just so happy that he's on this team. I think, personally, and I don't know if you agree with this, he, in my mind, is the best pitching acquisition they could have made. Given the injury risk, the age, the salaries of the other options, I'm really happy with the contract he got. I'm really happy with that addition. And when you're signing the best hitter on the planet, I don't care if he was on your team last year, and one of, if not the best pitching acquisition on the market, in addition to, you know, you're re-signing your first baseman and upgrading the bullpen only halfway through the offseason, it's hard for me not to be happy about this and not to be happy in the state of Yankees baseball on December 22nd.
In the last two seasons, among pitchers who have pitched at least 250 innings over that time, Carlos Rodon is 6th in wins. He is 1st in strikeouts per 9. He is 5th in ERA, one spot behind Nestor Cortez. Let that one sink in. He is 3rd in WAR despite having 55 and 59 fewer innings than the two guys ahead of him. I sorted in the wrong direction. He's 1st in FIP, as I expected. The guy's incredible. He doesn't really give up the long ball very often. He doesn't walk a ton of guys. He strikes out a ton of guys. It isn't like a weird BS, like, super low BABIP thing. Like, the knock on Nestor Cortez, for example, would be, like, how long are you going to sustain a 244 BABIP against you? Like, Carlos Rodon is not in the bottom 30 of lowest batting average on balls in play against in the last 2 years. That's like a pretty good sign. It indicates that what he's doing is sustainable. And that makes sense. If you think about it, like, he's just striking a ton of guys out. And that's a great strategy. Like, if you get mad about strikeouts when guys are at the plate, you should love pitchers who strike a ton of guys out. And they're very effective. Carlos Rodon is absolutely the best pitching acquisition they could have made. You know, the Mets went all in on their geriatrics, and we'll see if it works or not. But I think it's absolutely true that the Yankees have the best pitching staff in Major League Baseball, not just the best starting rotation, which they also have, but the best pitching staff, period. And that's reflected in Fangraphs projecting them to lead baseball in war from pitchers. I mean, this team is already ridiculously good. We should talk about left field. We should talk about the Brian Reynolds rumors. We should talk about what people are saying about the kind of prospects that the Pirates would like. And we should talk about potentially some other options and, you know, how we're thinking about that whole thing. But okay, so after the Carlos Correa acquisition, the Mets are projected to have 0.8 more Fangraphs WAR than the Yankees, who are projected to lead the American League. As far as I'm concerned, this team is the favorite in the American League. You can make an argument that they should be the World Series favorites as currently constructed. I agree with what you were saying about Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is a lot better than whoever would have been taking at bats in right field if they had not brought him back. And he's a lot better than the right fielder on the other team. Anthony Rizzo is a lot better than whoever would have been playing first base if they hadn't brought him back. And he's a lot better than the first baseman on most teams. That's how I'm thinking about this. The idea that the Yankees were like this seriously flawed team last year and that the offense was anemic is ridiculous. They led the American League in position player WAR. They led the American League in runs. They led the American League in homers. They led the American League in isolated power. They were second in the American League at extra base hits as a percentage of total hits. They were second in slugging. They were second in WRC+. They were second in OPS. And, of course, they were first in run differential, which is not only an offensive stat, but is an offensive stat that matters. Someone asked me how they were with runners in scoring position. They had a 121 WRC plus with runners on base, a 115 WRC plus with runners in scoring position, and 111 WRC plus with the bases empty, meaning they actually got better with runners on base. And they had a 116 WRC plus, which was also higher than their average, with in high leverage situations. This offense was really good. Bringing back the components of it that made it good is a smart thing to do. Matt Carpenter, I'll miss you. And having a healthy DJ LeMahieu is going to be valuable. Not giving as many plate appearances to IKF and Josh Donaldson and Aaron Hicks is going to be valuable. Whether they make an impact move in left field or not, and I do expect them to make one, whether it's for Brian Reynolds or someone else, the idea that this offseason is a failure because Brian Reynolds isn't already on the team is ridiculous, especially since, as we may discuss later, a 125 WRC plus bat is a special thing, but it's not the hardest thing to find when you're looking at guys around Major League Baseball who could play left field for the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, I think people on Twitter have been, you know, saying, well, mostly Astros fans probably saying this, that it's, you know, it's the same team, and IKF and Donaldson and Hicks are still on the MLB.com depth chart or whatever you want to look. And I mean, that, like, talk about just not, well, one, it's December 22nd, but two, there's three better options right now, like, without even getting anyone that you could put at all of those positions, and especially left field. Like, starting with left field, there is a 0.00000, you know, infinitesimal chance that Aaron Hicks is going to be starting left field. I just, you know, from everything we have seen, there is no way, despite what Brian Cashman says, that they're going to run him out on opening day in left field. And as for the infield, there is absolutely no way when Yankees, you know, personnel and Yankees reporters are already talking about, Oswald Peraza as a candidate, if not the candidate, to start at shortstop. Like, this is going to be a completely different situation than last year. One, it's going to be a different spring training where the young guys will probably have a lot more of a chance because of the lack of a lockout and the lack of abbreviated spring training. I mean, let's not discount that. Not that I think any of them would have gotten a chance last year, but this year there will be time for those competitions to play out naturally. And given what IKF did last year, I think it's very reasonable to expect Oswald Peraza to have every chance to win that shortstop job. Now, Josh Donaldson, a little less sure about, but if he comes back, he will have minimal rope. And as you said, like, you can run out a lineup with Glaber and DJ and Peraza and Rizzo in the infield. And if Josh Donaldson is starting opening day, that doesn't mean as much to me as, you know, the guy who starts 4 of the first 7 or, you know, 5 of the first 8. Like, we've seen the opening day lineup not reflect actually who is in the actual lineup. I mean, like,
Greg Bird, Brandon Drury, Troy Tulowitzki.
Right. But even on this team, I mean, Kyle Higashioka, like, getting the opening day start. And Trevino took that job pretty quickly. DJ LeMahieu didn't start an opening day in 2019, and he was able to get his rightfully due playing time pretty quickly. So, like, I don't really care about the depth charts. Like, I don't care about who's starting opening day. I think that at the end of the day, the Yankees are not – they're not blind. I think what they say and what they do, it two completely different things. And this offense is upgraded by that sheer fact that there's a whole offseason to reset. There will be a different left fielder, most likely from outside the organization. Oswald Peraza or some shortstop who is not AKF will get significant time. Josh Donaldson will have a short rope if it even exists, if he even, you know, just starts off on the bench. Harrison Bader will be playing a full season. And you're bringing back Anthony Rizzo and Aaron Judge, who are just, you know, two key components of this lineup. Like, you're telling me that – plus, the other thing is that over the course of the season, like, last year's lineup was incredibly good. And this year's lineup has improved from that because there was a lot of significant holes in last year's lineup. And – you know, that kind of grew as the season went on. And I guess what I've been saying is that those holes are right now, even though we may not know it behind the scenes, there are moves being made to get rid of those holes. So yes, if Aaron Hicks, IKF, and Josh Donaldson are playing every single game in April, then come back to us and we'll be proven wrong probably. But that's not going to be the case. And, you know, if you've been watching this team for any significant amount of time, you know, that's not going to be the case. And, you know, even, you know, if it's more of the case, you know, if Donaldson or IKF is playing more so than usual, like, look at the guys they already have. Look at the guys that are going to be in the lineup opening day. Like, it's an incredibly talented group. And I'm not going to sit here and worrying about the left field situation right now because we've locked up Aaron Judge. We've locked up Anthony Rizzo. Like, that's the important part. The left field will figure itself out. Like, I just think people need to calm down on December 22nd and reasonably think that there are moves being made right now without any external transactions that will negate these guys playing time. And you know there's going to be external transactions.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Like, in order for people to believe that the Yankees are some, like, incredibly flawed team, that they were an aberration all year and they finally played to their true talent level in the ALCS. Like, it's just the whole thing is ridiculous. I don't even want to entertain it. And you're exactly right. Aaron Hicks, IKF, and Josh Donaldson are still on the roster. And as some idiot Astros fan pointed out to me on Twitter, as you reference, MLB.com has them all in the first slots on their depth chart. As if that's going to happen. It's ridiculous. Gleyber Torres is going to start at second base. DJ LeMahieu is going to start at third base. I guarantee you, if opening day were tomorrow, Oswaldo Cabrera would start in left field and Oswald Peraza would start at shortstop. That's a good team. I mean, it's insane. It's not worth dignifying any more than we already have. The Yankees are going to make moves. We both expect a move for a left fielder. The Brian Reynolds move, or the Brian Reynolds rumors, really started to get hot this morning. And there was a John Morosi tweet in which he said, look, the Yankees and Pirates are engaged about Brian Reynolds, but the Pirates are looking for young pitching prospects, and the Yankees don't really have that in the top of their minor league system. I think you have an interesting take on this. What I'll say, and I went back with our friend Ryan Garcia on Twitter about this, is like, if the Pirates want to move Reynolds and what they want in return is a group of very good starting pitching prospects, then the Yankees are going to have a tough time getting him. Like, that's just the reality of the situation. If they're serious about that, and that's the type of package they'd like to get in return, it would be very hard for the Yankees to get him. Because if you look at the Yankees' top, like, 15 prospects, 7 of them are pitchers, and 1 is Luis Gil, who's injured all year. You have 2 who are in rookie ball. You have 2 of them who Ryan included in a hypothetical deal, which were Clayton Beter and Will Warren. And then the only guys you have left are Yoenis Gomez and Brandy Vasquez. So, you know, the Yankees, sure, they could trade, like, all 5 non-rookie ball starting pitching prospects in their system for Brian Reynolds. I don't know about the prudence of doing that, but yeah, like, there has to be a double coincidence of wants here, right? Like, the Yankees have to want Brian Reynolds and the Pirates have to want what the Yankees are offering. And they might not. And if that's the case, like, so what? Go out and get Taylor Ward or Seth Brown, or, I hate saying this, but even Hunter Renfroe. Like, the Yankees can find someone.
I thought you were going to say Alex Verdugo, and no, I've seen that rumor too many times.
No, never Alex Verdugo. But gross. Ian Happ is another guy who would cost a lot less and, you know, produce similarly offensively. There are plenty of guys who the Yankees can go out and get, especially if the prospect packages that people are kicking around on Twitter, people, you know, who obviously have no knowledge of the situation, but especially if those prospect packages are even remotely close to what the Yankees are willing to part with, they can go get almost anyone's left fielder. So, like, I'm just so not worried about whether it's Brian Reynolds or whether it's someone else. If the Yankees are willing to put together a couple top 10 or 15 prospects from their system, they're going to get a guy who we like.
Yes, 100% agree. My difference in take is, as you alluded to, is that, like, I always try to think about, like, why is this now being released publicly? And I just have a hard time believing that if the Pirates, well, one, I have a hard time believing that those specific names were released, like, for any reason other than to put pressure on the Yankees. Like, why are they being released in connection with the Yankees? I don't think those pitchers or those teams have even, you know, come up in a trade talk, or the Pirates would have just taken the deal. So, like, my thing is that I think that the Pirates, that leak comes from the Pirates side, and I think they're, it's in an attempt to try to up the quality of prospect that the Yankees are offering, because my guess is that so far there has not been an offer to the Pirates' liking, and I think it probably would come down to one of those top guys being in the deal. And maybe, you know, maybe that's me over just, you know, thinking the Pirates are more desperate than they actually are, but I feel like if the Pirates are faced with a significant prospect package from the Yankees headlined by a hitter, or a less significant prospect package headlined by a pitcher who, you know, might not be at Dominguez or Peraza's quality, then will they take it? Well, the history of the Pirates actually suggests that they might take it, because they do a lot of shitty trade packages or quantity over quality. But, like, in a normal situation, I feel like teams don't operate like that all the time. Like, maybe sometimes they do, but a lot of times, like, they don't turn down the most beneficial trade package in terms of talent. Like, talent is going to be talent. I think it kind of actually relates to what we were just talking about. Like, why do you not target specific guys in the draft, or why do you upgrade in positions you already have strength at? Like, baseball is very unpredictable, and, you know, you want to just go and get the best guys available. Like, that's how I think. Maybe that's not how Ben Cherington thinks. Maybe it's
how
a completely
Steve Cohen
valid.
Thinks.
It's how Steve Cohen thinks, as we've seen. Maybe it's, you know, I don't know exactly, but I just think that the pessimism today, like, oh, the Yankees, like, that's it. The Yankees aren't going to be able to be in these talks. Like, that's just not something that I, like, that's not what I think is the case. And I think the Yankees can make it work if they go to a certain level that they might not want to go to. As you said, like, the package that they're willing to put together, maybe it won't get Brian Reynolds. It could get a lot of other people. The more and more we hear about, you know, left field trades, the more and more we realize it probably will be an external upgrade. But I don't know. Like, I just have a feeling that One of the takes I saw was that, like, yeah, the Brian Reynolds package is going to be a lot less than everyone thinks. And, like, again, given the history of the Pirates, like, I'm inclined to agree with that. Maybe it's still, like, Peraza headlining, but the pitcher could be Schmidt, or it could be Will Warren, or it could be one of the other guys you reference. Like, maybe the pitcher doesn't have to be the headliner. Maybe it can be a secondary piece in addition to a Peraza headlining the package. I just think, like, you never know with this stuff, and I don't know if the Pirates are as willing to hold on to him as people, you know, are assuming. Like, the guy requested to leave Pittsburgh, and that's a tough situation to enter spring training with. So that's, like, a little bit of leverage that they've lost. I don't know. It's very interesting. And today was the first time I think we heard the Yankees actually connected to Brian Reynolds in, like, a legitimate trade rumor. So that in and of itself makes me more encouraged than any of the specifics. That's my top line take.
So I have two questions for you. Right now, who do you think starts in left field on opening day? And if you had your druthers of the players who you think are realistically available, given the quality of package that the Yankees could offer and, you know, the associated dynamics of baseball negotiation, who would you start in left field on opening day?
Right now, I just think it's a lot of smoke with the Max Kepler stuff. And I know that's not, like, everyone's favorite option, but I'm trying to be realistic here. And,
well, he's a great scientist.
he is a great scientist. I don't know how great he is on the baseball field right now, but given the Yankees and the Twins trade history, and there definitely is, like, we did talk about last time, there are reasons to think he can improve. I'm not sure that's the direction I'd like the Yankees going, but I feel like that could be a very realistic option for them. I don't think it's going to be Oswaldo Cabrera. That's, like, another take I've seen floating around. I think his value does not come from being locked into a starting position. Who would I like them? If I had my druthers, I honestly think Reynolds. I think, like, given what I said, I think they have the prospects. I think the Pirates have less leverage than we might think. I think Ben Cherington favors the quantity over quality package, and the Yankees have traded with him before. Like, I think it's going to happen. I legitimately do. I feel like in the next few weeks, there will be a move made, and it's probably going to be less than we think, but I think it will feature, like, a Peraza or Dominguez headliner. But I don't know, like, something about where the Yankees are right now, like, it kind of screams that they need an impact bat that's not Max Kepler. And, you know, like I said, I feel pretty good about where things stand with Brian Reynolds if there's, like, a legitimate connection between him and the Yankees, and rumors-wise. I also think Michael Conforto might be the other one I'd put alongside Max Kepler. I think trade-wise, Kepler, free agent signing Conforto. I also really like Dalton Varsho, but I don't really know if that's as – I don't know. Like, I feel like if the Yankees are
– again, we have Dalton Varsho at home.
We do. And I think the problem I have with Varsho is that if you're – he's going to require more – he's going to require more than people think, and I would rather just, like, go the extra mile and go for, like, a Reynolds or someone else. So that is my – that's my synopsis. Kepler, Conforto, realistic, and Reynolds somewhat realistic, but that's a bit more of a reach. I think it could happen, though.
So do you not look at, like, Brian Reynolds being projected for a 125 WRC plus, which is basically the same as, like, it's not as good as Seiya Suzuki, for example, and is basically the same as Josh Naylor. It is the same as Taylor Ward and Lars Nootbaar. It's only a little bit better than Jeff McNeil, Stephen Kwan. Andrew Vaughn is projected at 122. Jesse Winker, who's been terrible, at 122. Miguel Vargas, who I've never heard of, who apparently is on the Dodgers, at 121. Juan Yepes, 121. Brendan Donovan, 120. You know, Christian Yelich, 118. MJ Melendez, 118. Mark Canna, 118. Austin Meadows, who's been terrible for 2 years, 117. Like, I just kind of look at where guys are projected to be offensively, especially given that, like, sure, Reynolds has played center field. He's not really anything special in the outfield. Like, he doesn't light up the stat sheet in any way from a defensive metrics perspective. And like, I don't, it's just like, it doesn't feel to me like it has to be him. Like he had negative 14 defensive runs saved and negative 7 outs above average in center field last year. Like the whole like, oh, he can play left field because he's played center field thing. Like he actually has been a serviceable left fielder in his major league career. Like he played there for a lot of 2020 and he had 4 defensive runs saved and 2 outs above average. But like he's nothing special. And that even might be giving him a lot of credit defensively. He's about to be 28 years old. So sure, he's not a free agent until after the 2025 season, but like you're not exactly getting what you would project to be the best years of him. He is coming off, you know, 2 extremely good seasons, but his strikeout rate went way up and his walk rate went way down between 2021 and 2022. 2021 appears to have been a little bit of a BABIP luck season for him. Like he hit 302. He's not a 302 hitter. He was a 390 on base guy. There's nothing about him that suggests that he's a 390 on base guy. He's like a 350 on base guy. He could scare 30 home runs, especially in the AL East. He totally could. But like there's, Brian Reynolds is not the 6 WAR player that he was in 2021. He's probably just about the 3 WAR player that he was in 2022. And Yankees fans are right now clamoring to trade Gleyber Torres, who is a 3 WAR player. And they're, you know, kind of in love with Harrison Bader, who is another 3 WAR player. So, like, I don't know, based on what I'm getting from Twitter, what I'm supposed to think of a 3 WAR player, but like Taylor Ward could give you that. Hunter Renfroe, who is a good defender, at least just from his arm, can give you that. You know, Ian Happ is almost sure to give you that. And it just something with Reynolds, it doesn't feel right to me that the Yankees should give up this crazy package for this guy. Like, I don't know how his value has gone so crazy. Like, I get that you get a guy who's cheap and hasn't hit arbitration yet, and it's like, oh my god, you know, even if he was a completely average player, like the asking price would be through the roof. But like the packages that people are talking about not getting the deal done are insane. And I get that you should sell out to win, but like you can get someone who's probably going to be pretty similar to what Brian Reynolds would be as the Yankees left fielder in 2023 for a lot less than what it would take to get Brian Reynolds.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a few things. Like, I definitely agree with you that I don't think they should sell out, you know, give up this like Godfather Soto offer, which, you know, if that's the case, then like no way, because I don't think he's worth that much. I just feel like with the Pirates, it's not going to be like that. But also, like, I think, yeah, like all the points you made are accurate, but I do think that the projections, you know, like he's projected to what be the same as Taylor Ward. I just think Taylor Ward, as his track record is a little more spotty than Reynolds. He basically rode 2 good months last year to have his overall numbers, whereas I think Reynolds, one, has had more of a track record of success, and two, even last year, I mean, from June on, he batted 285 with an 860 OPS and, you know, turned around basically a pretty poor start of the year. So his last year's numbers are definitely a little more deceiving. I think the overall, you know, the question is, are you getting the Reynolds who is, you know, closer to 2021, is going to OPS close to 900? You know, probably not, but also like that was what he was in 2019, 2021, and for most of 2022. I also think there is value in, you know, a switch hitter. Like, I mean, that's not really a reason to, you know, target someone, but as opposed to Taylor Ward, I don't think you need to add a righty with, you know, a righty who has had 2 good months basically to this lineup. And I guess availability, I mean, you know, he's available when other guys aren't, but again, like I don't think who we know who's available and who we don't know is available is really indicative of who's actually available. I guess where I land on it at the end of the day is, he's a pretty known commodity. He's a pretty proven commodity where some of these other guys aren't or might be a little more spotty. And I just believe the way these things go that, like, at the end of the day, like, what the Yankees – if the Yankees are trading for him, I would be comfortable with what they're giving up. Like, I think I texted you a few weeks ago, like, when is the last time the Yankees sold out, like, really good prospects to get a star player? Like, that...
Wait, are you... We need to rewind. I'm not letting you go unchecked what? Here. Taylor Ward's last two seasons, 2021 and 2022, his age 27 and 28 seasons, so he's a little bit older than Brian Reynolds. He hit 272, 352, 462 for a 129 WRC+. He walked 10% of the time and struck out 21.8% of the time. He had a 318 BABIP. Brian Reynolds, 282, 368, 492 for a 133 WRC+. He walked 10% of the time. He struck out 20.6% of the time. He had a 327 BABIP. These guys, I know you want to tell me how different they are. They are not nearly as different offensively as you're trying to get me to believe. Like, they just aren't. I get that Brian Reynolds is a very good player. I get that there aren't that many guys out there who have had a six war season who are realistic trade targets. I get that Brian Reynolds is really exciting and, you know, you can never have too many center fielders and the Yankees would have center fielders at every outfield position. Like, I get all of that. But the idea that you should trade Jason Dominguez, Oswald Peraza, and more today for Brian Reynolds when there are plenty of guys projected to be equally good as Brian Reynolds offensively, and everyone is telling me that this move is all about offense, when there are plenty of guys that you could go out and get who are going to be comparable offensively to what Brian Reynolds is supposed to be this coming year, and then you get to keep Jason Dominguez and replace whoever you get with Jason Dominguez in a year or in 2 years. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me,
okay,
man.
Taylor Ward in 2021 played 65 games, hit 250, barely any playing time. And
he had 237 plate appearances. And you can't act like that's a small sample.
With a 769 OPS while Brian Reynolds was OPSing over 900, like in a full season of playing time as a switch-hitting center fielder. And I get the defense isn't there, but there is more value in that versus Taylor Ward, who's playing a corner outfield position and playing...
Which is what we're going to be asking this person to do. Whipple, I mean...
Okay,
you can,
in 2023, but when Harrison Bader leaves...
You can tell me that Brian Reynolds OPS'd over 900 in 2021 and be right about it, but it doesn't change the fact that in the aggregate, in Taylor Ward's last 800 plate appearances versus in Brian Reynolds' last 1,200 plate appearances, they are different by 4 percentage points.
And in
four.
Okay, in Taylor Ward's 2022 season, which is carrying the bulk of the statistics that you're saying, he, in his first 2 months in May, from April to May, he hit 347 with an 1,100 OPS, 1,145, 405 BABIP. After that, he rode that BABIP to the first 2 months of which basically carried that. After that, for the rest of the season, he hit 259, 325, 404 when his BABIP normalized back to 300. So basically, it's 2 months worth of hot plate appearances that are carrying that versus Brian Reynolds, where it's like 2 months of cold plate appearances are bringing him down.
What was Taylor Ward's WRC plus from June to the end of the season? It was 107. The Yankees got a 90 WRC plus from their left fielder.
What was
from
Brian
June
Reynolds'
to the end of the season?
WRC
also,
plus from June to,
like,
the end of last season?
But why? I don't understand why you're picking out these stretches as if the Yankees wouldn't get all the performance. Like, I could point out that Brian Reynolds started the season with 200 plate appearances of 104 WRC plus ball because his BABIP was super low, and then finished it by, you know, popping off and hitting for a 135 WRC plus, during which time he wasn't really walking as much as you'd want him to and was striking out just as much as Aaron Judge does, and everyone tells me that's a huge problem, where he hit 282, 360, 485. Like, yeah, you can find good and bad stretches in guys' seasons. Brian Reynolds had 200 bad plate appearances and then 400 good ones. Taylor Ward had like 200 good ones and then 400 slightly above average ones. Like, that happens. And the fact that what you can't ignore is that over the last two seasons, they are different by 4 percentage points. They are 29% better than the average player and 33% better than the average player. And this coming year, they're projected to be identical offensively. So I don't know why I would give up 5 of the team's top 15 prospects for a position where they're going to be relatively similar defensively, and we have already acknowledged we don't really care about the defense, and they're going to be the same offensively. Like, unless you think that your relative confidence in a player is better than Steamer and Zips, which you might think because Brian Reynolds has a 6-war season behind him, then I don't understand why you would give up everything for Brian Reynolds instead of just another guy who's going to give you exactly what Brian Reynolds is going to
give
you. I
agree that you shouldn't give up the farm for Brian Reynolds, but I would much rather have Brian Reynolds than a guy before 2022 had basically played a full season's worth of games over 4 seasons and hit below league average OPS wise, and then had 2 hot months and then regressed back to something that if Yankees fans saw those last 4 months, they would say he was not an upgrade over the current options versus a guy who has,
except they'd be wrong
with a close to 700 OPS. I mean, maybe they'd be wrong, but like, I also think that like,
no, it's not maybe they'd be wrong. Over from June to the end of the season, Taylor Ward was 17 percentage points better than the Yankees left field. Like, that's just a fact.
But
he hit 259, 325, 404. That's a 729 OPS. It's a 107 WRC plus. Over that same period, the Yankees got a 90 WRC plus from that position.
Okay.
Like, I don't know. And he was walking and striking out at exactly the same rates as Brian Reynolds. He just wasn't hitting for quite as much power. His power was a lot more at the beginning of the season. But he still had 15 doubles and 13 homers in that span.
Yeah, I mean, I see the point that their numbers are going to be similar projection-wise. I just have more confidence in the guy who has a greater track record. I agree with you that you should not give up the farm for Reynolds. But if it's a choice between Reynolds with, you know, headlining with Peraza or Ward...
Okay, who would you give up for Brian Reynolds? If you need to give up 5 of the team's top 15 prospects for Brian Reynolds, and Peraza and Dominguez are both in the deal.
No, I would not do Peraza and Dominguez. I would do Peraza or Dominguez as the headliner. I've said that.
Interesting.
I mean, I think Peraza or Dominguez with some of the pitchers as the secondary pieces is where I think this could realistically go. I mean, yeah, I get the projections are similar. I think there are reasons that even you have to admit that Reynolds is a better option. Nonetheless, the fact he could play center field, and the Yankees are going to need a center fielder again after Bader potentially leaves after 2023. So switch hitting
or
center fielder who has a better track record. Maybe they won't. But like at the end of... Well, they absolutely will, because I think Harrison Bader is going to get more than the Yankees are willing to pay him, but that's probably a conversation for a podcast next year.
You don't think Harrison Bader's going to take the hometown discount?
From Bronxville?
Let's not forget he's from Bronxville, which has Bronx in the name.
Yeah, I think projections at the end of the day probably tell you these guys are going to be similar, but projections don't account for the fact that one guy has certain advantages to his game.
Projections, you know, absolutely account for that.
I mean, the fact that he plays center field, the fact that the Yankees have that position in need, and the fact that Taylor Ward doesn't have as good of a track record as Reynolds does, I think are all things you have to take into account.
That's fine. It's fine. Like I think if the package that it takes to get Brian Reynolds is anything like the package that people are talking about, or anything like, you know, wherever that, like, it's going to take a Juan Soto package came from, like, that's insane. And I know you're not saying that that's where you think it's going to get to, but if the Yankees, like, pay up for Brian Reynolds in the way that people are talking about, I think that the Yankees made a mistake.
This goes back to my other point. When have the Yankees ever done that? Like, ever been, where's there ever been? This was what I was texting you about before you decided to be a Taylor Ward stan, which I like Taylor Ward. I mean, I picked him up in fantasy baseball, but anyway, I think
I like
that
Taylor
the
Ward
Yankees
too.
Have, Taylor Ward and Tyler
and Tyler Wade. And didn't they have another? Oh, they had Jared Walsh and Brandon Marsh.
Yeah.
The Angels were really doing it.
Soon they're not going to have Shohei Ohtani.
That's true, because he's going to be starting in left field for the Yankees. What?
True. Yeah, that's why. Reynolds will slide over to center and Ohtani will be
exactly.
in left. Yeah, bookmark this for a year from now. But yeah, when have the Yankees ever put together a package of prospects where you have said, wow, I really, really am not comfortable with them giving up this package?
I'm a huge Kevin Alcantara guy.
But I mean, like, you know what I'm saying.
No, I know exactly
what
you're saying. They tried to do it for Cliff Lee, and even that package didn't, blow you away because it was a rental.
But the thing with Cliff Lee is that, which we learned, is that they just did not want any part of Jesus Montero, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And fortunately. Unfortunately, because we did like him.
We did.
But there has never been a situation in recent memory where the Yankees, stepped to the front of the line and blew everyone away with the sheer amount of prospects they were willing to offer. Every time the Yankees...
So does that make you think that they won't... It makes you think that there's a ceiling on where they're willing to let the Reynolds ask get to.
Yes.
And if it surpasses that stage, then they're just going to say, for that reason, I'm out.
Yes, I 100% think so. I mean, I don't even know. I think the fact that they were willing to, headline a Castillo package with Peraza makes me think that, a Peraza headlining package is reasonable. But there is never going to be a situation where it's going to be, Dominguez, Peraza, Austin Wells. The Yankees just don't operate like that every single time. In every scenario they've stepped in, it's either been for a depressed value asset, a financial situation which the money they're taking on kind of offsets the value of the prospect. Giancarlo Stanton and A-Rod. I mean, or, some combination of the two, Aroldis Chapman.
Hey,
without fail.
Don't talk about... You know that our guy, Eric Jagielo, was a top prospect and that the Reds really wanted to get their hands on him.
Right. No, absolutely. I think the Chapman package was actually pretty good considering it was 1 year of a reliever.
Yeah.
But I think the way that you look at this stuff is Brian Cashman has been around for 25 years. So you probably know how he's going to operate pretty well. I think that's the biggest clue. The reason that I'd still be optimistic about Reynolds is I just think the Pirates might take a package that is more in line with what the Yankees might be comfortable offering, but maybe they don't. Like you said, there's a lot of guys out there, and Taylor Ward will be a Yankee or some other guy, the Diamondbacks outfielders.
Give me Taylor Ward. Can I tell you about an exchange I had with Southwest Airlines on Twitter a couple weeks ago?
Yes, definitely.
So I was, I'd flown out to South Bend, or actually I'd flown out to Chicago to drive to South Bend for the Notre Dame Clemson game. And, our flight landed in Chicago, but they were having trouble with the jet bridge. So they weren't opening the door, because there would have been too big a gap for us to mind or something. And, so I tweeted at Southwest and I was like, let me off the plane please, and Southwest was like, look, we're sorry, can you send us your confirmation number and we'll work on it. And I'm like, no, it's not your fault, I think it's probably the airport's fault, but the jet bridge isn't working and I'm frustrated, I have places to go, whatever. And they were like, oh, we're sorry to hear that, do you want to hear a pirate joke? So, would you like to hear a pirate joke?
Yes, definitely.
What's a pirate's favorite letter?
R?
See, you'd think it would be R, but it's actually the C.
That's a second level joke.
It is. So, that's all this talk about Brian Reynolds and the Pirates has made me think of that.
Well, should we talk about Aaron Judge?
I'm down to talk about Aaron Judge, the best player in baseball, the reigning MVP, the new captain of the New York Yankees, the first captain of the New York Yankees to be an outfielder since one, Babe Ruth. And look, Whipple, I'm happy for Aaron Judge.
If you need context for that, just listen to our last episode.
Yeah. But no, it's amazing. Never in doubt. As I said, I was supremely confident the Yankees would bring him back. They did. I honestly thought it was kind of cool the way Judge talked about how Hal told him that they wanted him to be the captain. Like, you know, he said they were on the phone. It was 3 a.m. And, you know, Judge, obviously, we now know, said, like, hey, give me the extra year. And Hal did. And then at the end of the conversation, once Judge said, okay, like, it's done, Hal was telling him that, you know, his favorite players had been Thurman Munson and Willie Randolph and how much he respected them and all of that. And those guys were, of course, captains of the Yankees. And he said that they wanted Aaron Judge to be the captain. I just think that's so cool. Like, you can tell that Judge is a guy, or at least is very good at presenting himself as a guy who appreciates the history of the game and what it means to be a Yankee and really embraces being a part of this team. He is clearly the leader. He is the best player, not only on the team, but in baseball. And, you know, for them to lock him up long term and add him to this pantheon of greats with, you know, Derek Jeter and Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth, it's pretty cool. And I'm very glad that I will get to root for Aaron Judge for the rest of his baseball career, because, you know, players like this don't come around all the time. And as you pointed out in your article, Judge is like the continuation of the Jeter legacy. And now it is time for him to, you know, cement his own. So I really liked the article that you posted on YankeesFiles.com this morning about the Aaron Judge legacy and the parallels you drew to Derek Jeter. Is there anything you want to say about it?
Yeah, Aaron Judge is a really good player, and I'm also glad to be rooting for him. Quickly what you said, I really liked how that came about too with the captaincy. I'm glad they didn't use it as a negotiating tool, because that would seem a little transactional, like, come back and we'll make you captain. I think it was kind of everyone understood, but like, it was, I just felt better, like you said, about the way that it unfolded. But yeah, I was inspired to write because, as I've alluded to, maybe mentioned sometimes, I used to have a blog about the 2012 to like 2014 Yankees. So definitely the prime, you know, peak of Yankees baseball. But I had that, I was writing in Jeter's last season, and it kind of like what I was, you know, we were witnessing now kind of touched off this memory, and I ended up quoting from the blog, or from the old blog, because I think the parallels between, you know, the end of Jeter and the beginning of Judge are pretty cool, like, to draw. I was writing about how I saw Jeter in 2013 hit a leadoff home run, first pitch back from the injured list, and, you know, reminded me of that this year when I went to see Judge hit a first inning home run off McClanahan in a June game against the Rays. And I think that kind of, that sums it up really nicely. And just like, you know, these are the two Yankees captains doing the same things, getting the same adoration. But, you know, in this situation, Aaron Judge was probably faced with a choice unlike that of Derek Jeter, just because he was faced with, and I wrote about this, like the Robinson Cano choice, and the choice to leave for, you know, maybe more money, maybe less money, maybe about the same, but to do something different versus to stay and continue this legacy. And the Jeter, the end of Jeter's career kind of dovetails nicely with that Cano decision, because, you know, that was the guy that we all thought, like you and I thought, was going to be the guy who picked it up and ran with the Jeter legacy. And when that didn't happen, that left the Yankees kind of rudderless for a few years. But in retrospect, I think it actually worked out really nicely. One, because Aaron Judge is the legacy, or the successor to Derek Jeter's legacy. I think we wanted Robinson Cano to be, but Robinson Cano isn't that kind of player. He was the best player in the Yankees for sure, but Aaron Judge is Derek Jeter. Like, they're so similar, except he's really, really good at baseball in a way that Derek Jeter probably didn't reach statistically. So it's like a version of Jeter that's leveled up, I think I said. And
yeah, Derek Jeter probably, like, if you look back, deserved two MVP awards. in his 20-year career, Aaron Judge has already deserved two MVP awards. Like, it really is. Derek Jeter was an incredible player, you know, more than worthy of his near unanimous Hall of Fame induction. And I don't want to take anything away from him, but he never was head and shoulders above the rest of the sport just from a pure ability and production perspective in the way that Aaron Judge has shown us he is capable of being.
Right. Absolutely. I think, you know, undeniably Aaron Judge should have two MVPs at this point. And I would, you know, I would bet on there being more rather than there not being more. And that's, yeah, that's a situation where it's like, with Cano, just because he's the best guy doesn't mean he should be the captain or be the leader of the Yankees.
Yep.
The fact that Aaron Judge is both the best player on the planet and also like the guy that he is, the leader that he is pretty incredible. And I think it makes him absolutely the, you know, the worthy heir to the Jeter legacy, the captain legacy, because like this is something, yeah, like the Yankees have really not had this maybe since Babe Ruth, where the undeniably best player, maybe Mattingly at times, you know, like it's just hard to go back and know. But the point is, like, the Aaron Judge is that Babe Ruth figure. He is hitting heights that many Yankees players, most Yankees players, haven't hit. And he's also, you know, one of the best leaders, the best leaders that they've had in the team's history. And for him to have left would have been, I think, something greater than, you know, just a simple player switching teams. It would have been, you know, the shattering of this myth that the Yankees, you know, they people feed off this legacy, and it's the thing that sets the Yankees players and the Yankees team apart. And as you said, I mean, you weren't going to watch games. You were going to resign your fandom.
I was done.
And, you know, you are the most committed fan that I know. Like, you're the guy who actually would watch the games if, you know, the team wasn't good. And you to say that, it means that it's not just about on the field stuff. There is something greater that, you know, the Yankees were able to maintain with Aaron Judge's re-signing. And I guarantee right now, Anthony Volpe coming up, if Anthony Volpe turns into any sort of a team leader, it will be because of the example that Aaron Judge sets. And it's something that, you know, people like to rag on the Yankees sometimes for being, you know, outdated and kind of stuck in the past. But I think they fuel themselves. They draw strength not only for like marketing and the brand, but also just within the clubhouse for this ideal that's kind of, you know, playing for something that's greater than the team. And it's a really nice unifying concept. And I think it really brings the team together at certain times. That all would have been gone if Aaron Judge did not re-sign. So that the fact that he's able to, you know, re-put on the jersey and become the captain, even though everyone kind of already knew he was, I just think like it kind of closes the loop on what happened 9 years ago with Jeter retiring and Cano leaving. Like, this is kind of the way it was meant to be, and the alternative is something that I don't think anybody would want to consider. So, you know, the games are important, the stats are important. It's awesome watching Judge hit home runs, but like, the way the Yankees are going to be different is not by any of those things. It's by the fact that, you know, you can tell your kids that you watched Aaron Judge just as your parents told you they watched Jeter and Mattingly and, you know, Mantle and Reggie Jackson. Like, that is the Yankees. So it was a cool thing beyond baseball to watch Judge become the captain. And I'm happy that I had the written content to draw from, because it kind of gave me a window into myself from a decade ago, how influenced I was by Jeter. And I think I was like, yeah, like I bought into the Derek Jeter Kool-Aid, but like, that's the whole point. Like, they want, like, not they want you to, but like the Kool-Aid is there to drink. And that's part of the experience of being a Yankees fan, is buying into that collective myth, drinking the Kool-Aid, sharing those stories. And that, yeah, that could have been lost, and very, very glad it did not.
I will say, my parents did not tell me about watching Mickey Mantle. They don't remember.
Your grandparents did, though.
That's true.
Because you mentioned that like five times.
That's a fact. So, Whipple, I think this is a good place for us to wrap up. People should go read your article. It's up at YankeesFiles.com. It's on the front page, so it's not hard to find, and it is very good. We have some other stuff up there as well. We have our off-season entrance survey that we talked about a couple episodes ago. I have my article dispelling the myths that you may have fallen into believing about, you know, what befell the Yankees in the playoffs. But really, you should go read Whipple's article about Aaron Judge and Derek Jeter. As you know, Whipple, there's only one way to end this podcast and to end this calendar year of the Yankees Files podcast, most likely, potentially, maybe not, who's to say. And that is to rate our confidence in this team after the Carlos Rodon acquisition, which, of course, was made official yesterday, and the press conference took place this morning. How are you feeling about this team, 1 to 10?
As we said at the top, it's really hard to feel bad when you've signed the best hitter and potentially the best hitter or pitcher on the free agent market. And I think, were we at 8.5s last time?
8.5.
8.5s. I mean, that has to go up. Like, Carlos Rodon has made this team a lot better, a lot better. Even though they already were good at starting pitching, you can never have enough starting pitching. And you know what? Like, I don't even care if, you know, statistically other guys might have provided something that might, you know, Rodon didn't upgrade on that much. I want Carlos Rodon starting game two of the ALCS against the Astros or the World Series. Like, he's a bulldog, and I cannot wait to talk about him this year. I can't wait to, you know, watch him as he's mowing down the Red Sox in Fenway Park. He is that guy. Like, I honestly don't know if I felt that way, not even like talent wise, but just like mentality. Like, it's really hard to find those guys who are just competitors. Rodon is that guy. That makes me a hell of a lot more confident in pairing him with Cole and just withstanding any issues with the rotation. They will upgrade the offense. So right now, like, I feel as confident of the team as I have since probably the middle of the season. So I'm going to go up to 9.5. Maybe it's a little optimistic, but we got Carlos Rodon in addition to the reigning MVP, who is now the team captain. The vibes are pretty good.
Yeah, the vibes are phenomenal. I think I'm looking back at the entrance survey. I said in my realistic offseason, I had the Yankees signing Judge, Rizzo, Rodon, check, 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 and the hit manager, Mitch Haniger. I wanted them to rid themselves of Donaldson and Hicks, and I wanted them to acquire, by whatever means, an underwhelming infielder, a reliever, and a seventh starter. So, you know, Judge, Rizzo, Rodon, done. Haniger, not going to happen. The Giants got him, but I think we both agree there will be a move made for an outfielder. So I think that is, frankly, as good as done. Whether they rid themselves of Donaldson and Hicks or not, that's just, you know, it's just accounting. They're not going to play those guys. They've gotten a reliever, one that I'm more excited about than I thought I would be, in Tommy Canley. Depending on if they get an outfielder, they might not really need an infielder because, you know, they'd have Oswaldo Cabrera, you know, to be their utility guy anyway, but it wouldn't shock me if they made that move. And, you know, they're always loading up on pitching depth. I assume they, you know, sign some starter we've heard of but aren't in love with to a minor league deal and invite him to spring training. So I'm feeling really good. I don't think I can go to 9.5 yet, even though I've called this team the American League favorites and potentially the World Series favorites. Screw it. 9.5. It's the holiday season. I just feel really good about this team. They had, you know, the best offense in the American League last year. They had the best run differential in the American League. They will have the best pitching in the AL. They were only, you know, slightly off the Astros last year, and the Astros no longer have Verlander, who gave them 175 innings of 1.75 ERA ball, and the Yankees have Carlos Rodon, who's been one of the three best pitchers in baseball in the last 2 years. I'm very excited about the prospects for this team, and, you know, why not go to 9.5? So, Whipple, I've enjoyed it as always. I hope you have a great Christmas with your family and whoever else you may find yourself spending time with. I hope your dog, who canonically is named Glaber, gets all the gifts that your dog, who canonically is named Glaber, wants. I encourage everyone to go check out what you wrote at YankeesFiles.com. People can also, of course, follow us on Twitter, where we are at YankeesFiles. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to our podcast wherever you get it. We hope that you will rate, review, and subscribe, but we hope that if you don't like the podcast, you won't rate or review it. And Whipple, any parting shots from you?
Yeah, I'm already looking forward to the end of the year 2023 podcast, where we sit back and reflect on the World Series title that we won. Cole, Rodon, Cortez, Severino pitching four complete game shutouts. I mean, it's already going to happen, so we might as well look forward
it's
to
gonna
it
happen.
Now. But, you know, it's been fun doing this one, too. I'm just personally looking forward to next year's more. But I also hope you have a good Christmas as well, and that, you know, you find all the Taylor Wards in your stocking that Santa Claus feels fit to drop off. Taylor Wards, Tyler Wades, same difference.
I believe it's Taylor's Ward.
Taylor's Ward.
And with that, I will leave you with Carlos Rodon is left-handed Luis Severino. Taylor Ward's 35 home runs are going to look great on the World Series DVD. Until next time, let's go Yankees.